But first, it's time to have our mingle with Tingle. Laura is, of course, Chief Political Correspondent, 7:30. Laura, we've seen the IDF start to muster Palestinians out of Rafah ahead of a likely ground invasion. The government response?
They have responded. The Albanese government has responded pretty quickly tonight, Philip, to the news that that, as you say, the Israelis are trying to get everybody out of eastern Rafah. The Foreign Minister, Penny Wong's, put out a statement making it clear that Australia thinks this is a very, very bad idea, along with a lot of other Western countries, and that Israel should really just stop and think about it.
Well, of course, there's more than a million Palestinians who've fled to Rafah, haven't they, to escape the fighting elsewhere.
Well, you look at the map, Philip, and you go, this increasingly tiny little dot within even Gaza, which is, of course, a pretty small spot to start with, and, you know, it becomes sort of vaguely ludicrous to think that you're going to be able to squash a million people into it. And what are they going to do once they've cleared out the eastern half of Rafah? I mean, it's just beyond comprehension.
I understand the bombing has started in eastern Rafah. Now, the government has responded, meanwhile, to the university campaign protests, in particular the use of the phrase, from the river to the sea.
That's right, Philip. Of course, this is a very contentious phrase when used in Middle Eastern context, and the Prime Minister has basically been asked about this phrase and the fact that some of the protesters who are supporting the Palestinian cause on our university campuses are using that phrase, which is seen as, you know, as very hostile. Anthony Albanese has basically said, look, the way it's being used, or it's the way it's generally understood, is one which is not in accord with the idea of a two-state solution, and Australia's position remains a two-state solution. So he's trying to maintain some sort of middle path as much as you can in such a bitter dispute which involves so many communities in Australia, but he's certainly not endorsing any hardline positions being taken by the protesters, but the government and most other people are saying, well, they've got a right to protest as long as they do so peacefully, but, you know, people should not be attacking people because of their religions, whether they be Jews or Muslims.
Now, on to local matters, and the budget is just a week away. In fact, the next time we'll be talking, it'll be happening. And the government has, according to some, changed its higher education. Let's start with the new PRAC, P-R-A-C payment. What is it?
Philip, this is an attempt to do something to address what is, when you think about it, a reasonably outrageous situation where most of our nurses, our teachers, a whole range of other people who work in other care industries do their practical training in hospitals, for example, without getting paid. Apart from the fact that they don't get paid, often they've got to go on placements to a distant location, pay for their own accommodation, pay for the costs of getting there, and give up whatever their job is that is usually keeping them, funded at universities to do that. So the question, I suppose, is who should pay for that? I mean, you could sort of make a pretty good argument. I would have thought that hospitals and thus the states should be paying, for example, for the nurses who are doing that. The school system should be paying for school teachers who are doing that. It's because they're basically getting pretty free labour. But the federal government has announced that they will make a payment of some sort to some of these, not all of these people, but some of them. There are questions about whether it's enough, but...
Well, I understand it's less than JobKeeper, less than $319.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not anywhere... they're quite open about the fact that they're not trying to completely cover lost wages or anything like that. It's more than a token, but Not a lot more, Philip. I think it's basically saying, look, we're recognising that something has to happen here. There's a lot of language around at the moment, Philip, on this issue and a whole range of other ones of saying, look, you know, there's a whole heap of stuff to be done. This is an instalment. And the New South Wales government's been using that same language in the past 24 hours about its spending package worth over $200 million on domestic violence. In the same way, the Prime Minister announced the $925 million for a payment for women escaping violence. They're all saying this is a start. We know that it's nowhere near enough.
Well, we'll circle back to that other topic shortly, but take me now from Prac to HEX.
Yes. Now, this is all about indexation, Philip. So when you go and do your when you're going back to university after you finished at Late Night Live, you'll have to pay a delayed. You're probably not a good example of this. People who are going to university have to pay off their the cost of their tuition once they reach a certain income level after they've finished their degree. Now, the cost of that is basically always has to factor in the fact it's a loan from the Commonwealth and therefore it attracts interest. Now, the question has been, what's the indexation rate on those loans and therefore how much sort of the interest cost, if you like, is being discounted for inflation. The indexation rate for HEX was set in those olden days when inflation was very low. It's obviously jumped a lot, and as a result, people are suddenly finding that they've got much higher debt levels. So the government's announced it will fix the indexation of HEX, but it's not something that will immediately provide cash in hand.
The government claims it'll wipe out about $3 billion in student debt.
It will over time, but it's one of those things where it's one of those things where when you get to the end of your degree, you'll find that you don't owe as much, but it's not going to give you bucks in hand now.
Okay, let's now focus on the issue of how to deal with violence against women, and of course it's still not merely dogging but dominating the government. Now we've seen more than 200 women leaders write to the PM urging the government to raise the rate of the job seeker allowance.
So this goes to the point, Philip, that beyond the immediate questions of protecting women against violent partners who might have AVOs out on against them, or you know, bail systems not working, there's a lot to be done in the social security system, not only to make it more viable for women to leave, but also to stop the system being weaponized by perpetrators against them. Now, there's a whole heap of issues here, but one of the points that these women are raising is, and which the Economic Inclusion Committee, which the government set up under Jenny Macklin, reported on last week, was that income support levels are so low that it makes it basically not financially viable for women to leave a lot of the time. So this has been, you know, there's obviously been a long-standing campaign to try to get the job seeker rate lifted. That's the dole. This has basically become another arm of that to sort of say, well, look, you know, women can't leave. Often they haven't got work when they leave the situation they're in, and they can't live, particularly if they've got kids, on these, you know, really, really low income security packages.
Staying on the same topic but from a different point of view, the terrible story of a woman of 73, a Perth woman, Nanette Simons, being bashed has brought the attention back on the Immigration Minister, Andrew Giles.
It has, he hasn't had a great few months, Andrew Giles. Of course, this goes back to the High Court's ruling at the end of last year that ministers could not arbitrarily keep people locked up in immigration detention indefinitely. Acting on that judgment and advice, the government released about 150 people out into the community. There was a lot of uproar and outrage about that. The coalition said they had to be put straight back in the slammer, which of course constitutionally, based on what the court has said, is very difficult. The government put in place a whole range of measures to try to protect the community from people who were sort of known offenders, if you like, and that included setting up a board of experts, which includes ex-police commissioners and people like that, to assess what sort of restrictions should be put on some of the people involved. Now, one of the people who was released has been alleged to have been involved in this really awful, brutal bashing of this lady in Perth. And it's subsequently transpired two things that happened. One of them was that he appeared in a Perth court on completely separate charges in February, and the prosecutor did not oppose him getting bail. And then in March, this board that the federal government had set up had decided that it was okay for him to take off the ankle monitoring bracelet that he'd been wearing previously now. So there are all sorts of questions about why these decisions were taken. And it's a terrible dilemma for the government. It argues, look, we have to have a process separate from government that's independent to assess these things, because almost inevitably all of these matters are going to end up back in court. But at the same time, when these decisions end up with somebody acting in this way, or, you know, that allows somebody to act in this way, people want to know, well, you know, why the hell was he not wearing an ankle bracelet? Why weren't people keeping an eye on what he was doing? So the government's really stuck here, and the Prime Minister has actually taken the step of criticising the decision of the board to take this man's bracelet, to let this man's bracelet be taken off. But it's a bit of a no-win, I would have said, Philip. And once again, the question of whose responsibility this is, the Act says ultimately it's the decision of the minister, puts Andrew Giles in the frame.
Now, as I said, this time next week, we'll be preparing for the budget revelations. Slash and burn?
No. The pressure from the financial markets and various commentators and the opposition is very much that the government should be slashing and burning on the back of the fact that inflation's been rekindled both here and overseas in recent months. The Treasurer is taking is trying to make a virtue of a middle ground between slash and burn and, you know, a spend-a-thon, to use the other cliche. And so he's arguing, look, you know, we've got to take a path through. So the budget's basically designed to try to fight inflation short-term, boost growth medium-term, but doing that at a time when the revenue collections are not as strong as they were because commodity prices are falling. And there are these huge spending pressures like defence and the NDIS, which it's very difficult for the government to rein in the short term.
Thank you very much, Laura. Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent, 7:30.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.